Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. That's Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time on Dash Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. So a total and complete beatdown for the Bulls last night against the Magic. And not surprising, the Bulls extend their win streak to 7 against a battered and bruised Magic team, which was funny because they had 3 days off before they started this game, and they had 3 days to rest, relax, and hang out in Chicago. And you would have thought by then that they would have given the Bulls a decent matchup tonight, but without an Aaron Gordon-less, an Evan Fournier-less, and a Terrence Ross-less Magic team, this one was over before it really even started. What did you think about that, Matt?
Yeah, and I think that's something that Bulls fans should keep in mind when we kind of start to put our hand close to that panic button as far as this tank kind of blowing up in our faces with this extensive winning streak right now, which, by the way, seven in a row, longest Bulls winning streak under the tutelage and guidance of one Fred Hoiberg.
Yeah, the last time they won, they had a winning streak of 7 or more was dating back all the way to December 2014.
It was the last Tibbs season. So, I mean, that kind of tells you something. This roster has a bigger and longer winning streak than anything that D. Rose, Joakim, Jimmy Butler, Pau Gasol, D. Wade, and Rondo, all of those guys, none of them under Hoiberg could get a winning streak at 7. So that's pretty crazy. But, I mean, you mentioned that Orlando last night was without Terrence Ross, without Evan Fournier, without Aaron Gordon, three starters for Orlando when they started this season. And that has been a recurring theme. Not only have Bulls opponents been shooting abnormally poorly from three-point range, I mean, the Magic shot 5-for-27 for 18.5% from beyond the arc last night, continuing that trend that is basically just luck in the Bulls' favor. But it was another game where their opponent was missing key pieces. You know, they beat the Celtics without Kyrie Irving, and they were playing on the second night of a back-to-back. They beat the Sixers without Embiid. The Utah Jazz were missing key pieces when they beat them as part of this winning streak. So just something to keep in mind as you are thinking, like, just how good are these Bulls? Look, they're doing things a lot better. Role players are playing better. Bench guys are playing better during this win streak than they were prior to. They're having a lot more success with offensive efficiency. They're scoring in the post. They're hitting their mid-range shots. Like, a lot of things are working, but the Bulls are also getting some favors when it comes to their opponents and the state they're in. That's, you know, that's my takeaway from this blowout victory.
Yeah, I think that's something that I was going to bring up too. Is like, is the NBA as a whole like punking us as a fan base, or am I living out an episode of Black Mirror or The Twilight Zone? Because I feel like through this win streak, there's been 3-4 teams that have sit legitimate players or starters or whatever have had injuries where it's kind of played into the Bulls' favor. And some of the quotes that are coming out from these players, from the players, from the Bulls specifically, are more and more confident every day. And some people are trolling them on social media, which is obvious. But the one I wanted to get to was Denzel Valentine, who said after the game on Wednesday, I can't even say it with a straight face, that he thinks that the Bulls are one of the best teams in the East. And I will go back to a quote that Denzel Valentine had before the season even started, and he said he legitimately thinks that this Bulls team could compete for a playoff spot. So, Denzel Valentine, I applaud you for the confidence that you have and in the streak right now, and the confidence that you have in this team right now. But dude, let's think about what's going to go on for the next 2 or 3 years if you try to compete for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, this is absolutely, without a doubt, my favorite Denzel Valentine soundbite since his great comment about someone who said, you know, well, what would you say to somebody who says that winning the Summer League Championship doesn't mean anything? After the 2016 Summer League Bulls, led by Denzel, with some clutch shooting late in those games, including the championship game. So, well, okay, well, yeah, so the Bulls are Summer League champs. It doesn't mean anything. Denzel's response to that was, well, those people probably have never won a Summer League championship. Like, so salty and, like, such a smart-alecky response, and it was so hilarious. And to me, this recent comment about, yeah, I think we're one of the better teams in the East reminded me of that, because there's just such unabashedly confident, you know, like, it's outlandish. Like, come on. Like, look at your record, dude. And Denzel did preface that by saying, our record doesn't show that, because, hey, yeah, they've won 7 in a row, but they're still 10 games under 500. Come on. Let's be real here. This winning streak is fun, but there is no way that they are one of the, quote, better teams in the East. And, you know, we're about to play Cleveland, and then after that, we're about to play in Boston, who, you know, I'm sure will be hungry for a revenge victory after they lost to the Bulls in embarrassing fashion earlier on in this winning streak. So, no, we're going to go up against the two best teams in the East, and we're probably going to lose both of those games. And it's cute that Denzel is kind of, you know, thumping his chest, specifically after having one of his better games, if not his best game of the season. I mean, Valentine against Orlando dropped 16 points on 6 of 9 shooting, 3 of 4 from downtown, 10 rebounds, dished out 5 assists, and added a steal. So, a great night from Denzel. That's probably contributing to why he was so confidently talking about his team after the win.
Yeah, this was Denzel Valentine's best game throughout this win streak. We had kind of talked about, and I said that his three-point shooting wasn't very good over the course of this win streak. He was only shooting 25% from three.
Oh, he's been garbage.
And so, at least on Wednesday night, we saw him go 3 for 4 from the three-point line. He had 16 points. Like you said, he had a double-double, 16 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. So it's good. I'm glad for Denzel Valentine, and I'm glad for the Bulls players that they've kind of gone on this win streak, that they've built some confidence up to. Because as a fan and as people who cover the team, you have to think about it from their perspective too. Yeah, we all want to lose, but going through an 82-game schedule where you're getting your head pounded in isn't a whole lot of fun. So in terms of, it's not really more so about wins or losses, but more so how this team is playing and how they're playing together. And that's a credit to some of the guys that have been that have turned their season around, especially from the first 20 games or so that we have seen from the Bulls. Another note too, just real quick on the Orlando Magic. So Frank Vogel, I don't know what he's doing down there in Orlando, because he's doing one thing that he did with the Indiana Pacers that completely irritated me, and that was he didn't have trust in his rookies. And I feel like he's done this too now to Jonathan Isaac. So when he was with the Pacers, Miles Turner was coming off an injury that set him back 2 months. And when he came back, wasn't really incorporated into that starting role where a lot of fans thought he was going to. They realized pretty quickly that giving Miles Turner an opportunity to play actually benefited the Pacers on the floor, and people had been calling for that. I feel like there's the same situation going down with Jonathan Isaac, and I see Magic fans kind of around tweeting saying that he's not getting the opportunity that he should, and this is more of a Frank Vogel problem than it is an Orlando Magic problem. So I thought this was kind of interesting and kind of parallel to some of the things that he has done over the two teams that he's coached in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I think you need to keep in mind that this was Jonathan Isaac's just his second game back. Against the Bulls Wednesday night. He played in their game against Detroit on Sunday, but I mean, he missed nearly 20 games with that ankle injury. So, I mean, hopefully for his sake and for Orlando's sake, as they're kind of trying to find some bright spots with some of the younger pieces on this team that, as we talked about in our episode yesterday, you know, would you rather trade spots with any of the other tanking or bottom feeder teams if you're the Bulls? Like, you know, Orlando's been, you know, aimless for a while. And you kind of, Jonathan Isaac was a guy that was on my radar for the Bulls. and you hope that he comes back from this injury and has a positive season. But as far as what Frank Vogel is doing and the limited opportunity he's giving, I think you kind of at least have to take the last couple of, he only played 14 minutes off the bench last night. You have to take it with a grain of salt and say, you know, the Bulls have done something similar with Lauri Markkanen. And he's kind of shown that he's struggling. He briefly came out of his shooting slump, and now he's back down in it. And the Bulls have kind of tried to ease Lauri back into action. He's not playing big minutes like he was before the back spasms. If you have a piece that is a rookie and a very important piece to what your team is trying to build towards the future, you're not going to overwork them. And I think, you know, I understand the grievance that some people see with Frank Vogel, but when it comes to Isaac, I mean, same opinion I have about Lauri Markkanen. Like, why risk it?
So with that, too, I want to talk a little bit about some stats over this seven-game winning streak real quick. So just to give you kind of an idea over these seven games, I look at these stats at some of the offensive rating, defensive rating, even some more of the traditional stats, minutes and points and whatever. I look at some of these guys, and somebody that I point to that has played a lot better that I've been all over, especially early on this season, and besides Nico and Bobby just tearing the floor up, it's Jerian Grant. I actually am surprised with the way Jerian Grant's played over these seven games. And maybe that's a testament to Nico Mirotić and Bobby Portis coming off in that second unit and playing of a hell of a lot better, especially Bobby Portis. His assist to turnover ratio is insane right now over these seven games. He's averaging almost five assists per every turnover that he's getting. So for Jerian Grant to do that, I think he's opening up himself to be more of a pass first point guard. And for whatever reason, early on in this season, I felt like Jerian Grant was trying to do too much by himself. And we talked about this, the fact that he dribbled for 20 seconds and then would pass it off to somebody and give him a terrible shot. Like, incidents like that were happening a ton over the beginning of the season, especially when he was getting those starts. I think now it seems like with Chris Dunn playing confident in the starting role, Jerian Grant has kind of taken on that second unit, that leadership of that second unit, and it's helped. And I think that's a testament to Nico. That's a testament to David Nwaba and Bobby Portis coming in that second unit, and they're all playing really well together. So just between those two guys, just between Jerian Grant, and then your obvious is David Nwaba's played really well, like outstanding basketball. Nico Mirotić and Bobby Portis. This fight might have been the best thing that has ever come come out of these two guys. And I think everybody around the league is kind of surprised at the way that these two have bounced back. And I hate to say it, but the chemistry that they have on the floor when they're both of those guys are playing together, it seems like it's unstoppable. And it's funny. It's like almost if Bobby Portis and Nico behind the scenes are like, hey, everybody is counting us out, waiting for us to blow up at some point and something else to happen. Let's go out there and punk them and make them laugh, give them something to write about, give them something to put a headline on. And they certainly have done that over seven games.
Look, I mean, yeah, I guess you can say maybe there's a sense of pride here. I mean, you talk about how well Bobby and Nico have played since Nico's come back in these seven games, and particularly how well they've played together. I mean, that duo has, I believe, I mean, it was true after five games of the winning streak. I'm guessing it still is after seven. The best plus-minus ratio of any pair of Bulls on the roster. When those two were on the floor together, best plus-minus ratio on the roster. And so maybe it is a pride thing, because for a while, during training camp, after that happened, throughout the preseason, throughout the first, you know, month of the season, while Nico was rehabbing and in the Advocate Center, but not talking to Bobby and doing, I mean, they were the laughingstock, not just of Chicago sports media, but of, you know, they were getting national headlines about this ongoing feud and this big market team. And how hilariously sad is this? Like, talk about the Bulls rebuild getting off to an embarrassingly bad start. You got teammates punching each other on the practice court. Like, they were a laughingstock. And maybe there is some amount of pride that goes into that. And it's, you know, Nico had a post-game interview with NBC Sports Chicago's Vincent Goodwill, I think after win five or six, saying, you guys love to make fun of me and poke fun at me, whether it's the feud or the pump fakes. And, you know, I'm just out here and I'm trying to play well.
I've been telling you guys, you know, I've been very positive, and some of you guys, I've been thinking that you guys thought I was joking, but I was not joking. I was very, very serious.
I'm trying to prove to you guys that I have something to offer, and I think Bobby Portis has a very similar attitude to say, hey, I served my time, I made a mistake, I apologized, water under the bridge, we're moving on, I want to play well, Nico wants to play well, and we're both playing well, and our team is winning right now. So maybe the embarrassment transforming into, you know, a positive outlook of pride, and, you know, proving to the league and to your teammates and your coaching staff, the city, the city's fans, that you're not an embarrassment. I think that could be a factor.
I'm still hanging on to that factor that I gotta wait at least 6 weeks to see what Nico Mirotić does and see if this is for real. If there is no setback.
I mean, there's no way that he's continuing to shoot like 50% or better. Like, that's just not going to happen.
But if he's averaging, if you think about it, if he's averaging between 15 and 20 points a night, which during this win streak, he's averaging 19.6 points per game. If he's averaging somewhere between then I've got to give him some credit, because it's better than he's done in his three seasons here in the Bulls uniform. So, like, In that perspective, like you said too, I don't think his shooting percentage is going to be over 50%, which right now it's at 52.2% since he's been back. I see that regressing a little bit, but maybe I'm wrong again, and maybe Nico has turned that corner, and which would be good for the Bulls in the instance that it would increase value as far as if they wanted to trade him, or if there's a possibility that they do keep him around. I mean, he ends up being a valuable piece. I don't know. But like I said, I've got to wait for at least 6 weeks to kind of see whether or not that this is for real and he can string together a month, 6 weeks of solid play, because really we've only seen 1 month out of an entire season every year where Nico consistently can put together stat sheets and be impactful for a Bulls team.
For the time being, as long as Nico is performing this well, as you said, it ups his trade value. And the fact that the Bulls have won the 7 games that he has played in, there's probably some level of coincidence, and there's some level of he has absolutely something to do with that. And it's subtle until you really look at it and then realize maybe it's not so subtle, but Bulls PR has been all over Nico's nuts during this winning streak. Pardon my French, but you know, every time he makes a clutch play, after every night where he's putting up big numbers, they are praising the hell out of Nico Mirotić. Surface level, they are happy to have a guy back who they have been touting for years as an important piece to this roster. Surface, you know, slightly beneath the surface level, they want other NBA teams around the league to be thinking that Nico Mirotić has everything to do with this 7-game winning streak. They want Nico to get a lot of the credit. I think Fred Hoiberg, a guy who I knock a lot, deserves a lot of credit, because this Bulls offense that we've seen through these 7 games has been creative and smart and efficient in ways we have not seen a Fred Hoiberg offense before. And Nico has definitely been a big contributing factor to that. But the Bulls and their PR team are making it sound like Nico is the almighty, the be-all, end-all. The reason we're on this great streak is because Nico is back. They're upping his trade value. They're trying to make him look as valuable as possible.
I'm with you on that too. I think that's a huge part of it. And that's a huge part of the business too. Like, that's the business aspect of it too, is like, you got to try to sell. If there's a piece on your team, whatever sport you're talking about, if there's a piece on your team that maybe wasn't, that people weren't high on or sold off or whatever, written off because of whatever, I think this is a move that, like you said, if you have any idea how this works, They're obviously trying to sell him to other teams. And I think Nico's doing that himself too with the media. I think he is pushing himself to kind of have a positive spin on not only his attitude, but his confidence level too, and sort of selling himself. And I said that last week too. He's selling himself to the media and to all 29 other NBA teams out there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when that January 15th deadline comes up.
All right, well, Jordan, I definitely, for our second part of the show, we want to talk about a couple of interesting interviews that have come out with some Bulls higher-ups in the last couple of days. But before we do that, I want to tell our listeners about MyBookie. Bull season is here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for your payout? Sign up at mybookie.ag today and get paid fast when you win. MyBookie is your hookup for all of your betting needs, and you can even deposit using Bitcoin. Everybody loves Bitcoin these days. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to make money betting the bowl games, you got to get to mybookie.ag. They're the only site I recommend. I trust them, but you don't have to take my word for it. You can check them out yourself. They have odds on every matchup, as well as in-game live betting on all of these NFL games and bowl games. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate your offer. You play, you win, you get paid. It really is that easy. If you're going to bet, the only place to do it is at MyBookie. Visit MyBookie.ag today.
All right, so to finish up the show, we have to have this conversation because it's kind of ridiculous and it's super ironic, and I guess it's not ironic in terms of if you think about the way the front office and the ownership of the Bulls have handled themselves over the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. Does it surprise you at all that the Bulls front office all of a sudden now, 2.5 months into this new season, now all of a sudden we're getting a ton of media appearances from John Paxson. Jerry Reinsdorf is sitting down with local publications and doing interviews and talking with people about the Bulls. Like, all of a sudden, before this 7-game win streak, we heard nothing. There was crickets. I mean, besides the Nico and Bobby fight incident where media got access to John Paxson, it's been relatively quiet. I know John Paxson does kind of a hit with AM 780 when the Bulls are on there, but outside of that, it's very quiet. But all of a sudden, now that the 7-game win streak is here, it's like they've come out of the woodworks to take their credit for some of the trade pieces, some of the moves that they've made, and also the 7-game win streak. What do you kind of make of this?
Well, I mean, look, I think the Bulls front office, and you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about how it's been shifting more towards a John Paxson is the face as opposed to Gar Forman, and Forman's never really been great with the Chicago media, and that's certainly true. They've even when the Bulls are a relevant team nationwide, when they were, you know, a top four, even top one seed in the East, it's been always a fairly quiet front office. Whether you're talking about the Reinsdorfs or you're talking about Forman and or Paxson, like, they don't talk a lot. They aren't Mark Cuban. Or nothing even close to it. And I think that's just kind of how they like to operate. Jerry Reinsdorf is a hands-off owner. Michael Reinsdorf is a pretty quiet, behind-the-scenes guy. And Paxson and Forman both don't really enjoy the spotlight. Like, you can even just kind of tell with their body language when they do sit at a podium together or, you know, are having any kind of interview. Like, they don't like talking to the media. I mean, I can't necessarily blame them because for the last 3-4 years, they've definitely been getting a lot of heat from not just the fan base, but from certain media outlets who are very judgmental of the decisions they've been making. So it's, you know, it's like the hour leading up to going to a dentist appointment where you're like, ah, crap, they're going to find cavities and this is going to be awful. Or, you know, I got to go get a root canal. It's like, you know, I can't blame John Paxson and Gar Forman for not wanting to talk to the media. Same with the Reinsdorfs. Most people in this city hate them right now. So between that and the fact that they've always been kind of a behind-the-scenes, quiet, not very loud front office to begin with, I mean, it makes sense to me.
I've got a couple quotes from Jerry Reinsdorf, who did a sit-down with Casey Johnson. And Casey Johnson also wrote another article to his front page on Tuesday's paper in the Chicago Tribune, where it was titled Pax Gar instead of Gar Pax. And it was talking about those things that we had discussed too, where it was like, you constantly say this too, Matt, I could give you credit for this, is you say John Paxson and Gar Forman are two different entities and we like to stick them together as one. And Casey Johnson kind of went through this idea that Paxson wants to get more out in front of this. And so I have a couple quotes, though, from Jerry Reinsdorf talking on behalf of John Paxson, kind of talking about John Paxson. So they read, I picked John to rebuild when Jerry Krause left in 2003 because he's a leader. Nothing has changed, Reinsdorf said Tuesday in a phone interview. He's a fine evaluator of talent. He's a long-term thinker. He works well with the general manager. He works well with coaches. I'm a John Paxson fan. Gar is great with agents. John hates to deal with agents. Gar is good at negotiating with other general managers, but John was good at that too. Gar is great at cap knowledge and planning ahead. He's an extremely detailed guy. That's why we have the two jobs, and that's a trend that teams are moving to. They realized you need two different skill sets. So take that mindset, Jerry Reinsdorf, please. Take that mindset that you have about Gar and Pax and apply it to your scouting and your advanced analytics team, which is tiny. I mean, you could count the amount of people that they have working on that department on your two hands. So can we take that idea, which Jerry Reinsdorf talks about, the way that the league is moving, which the way the NBA is moving right now is advanced analytics. Why do the Bulls continue to feel like that they have to have this small circle and connection of people? Like, you would think that you would want to bring outside minds like he's talking about with different skill sets to ultimately make the best decisions. So why can't we apply that mentality to advanced analytics and to advanced scouting in the same way he's talking about the way that the Bulls deal with day-to-day operations? So I'm okay with the way he's saying that, but like, why can't we apply that to other areas of the Bulls organization?
Yeah, there's a lot of hypocrisies in that rambling of praise there from Jerry Reinsdorf. And the other one that I would point out is that he talks about how John Paxson is great at dealing with coaches. Oh, I'm sorry. So did we just forget the thing where he and Vinny Del Negro literally got into a shoving match before they fired Vinny? Are we forgetting how horribly the relationship between John Paxson and Tom Thibodeau deteriorated because there were certain things that Tom Thibodeau wanted to be like in-house, within-house, aka this is my business, it's me and my players, my coaching staff and my players, you don't tell me who's on my coaching staff, I don't tell you how to run your GM stuff and your salary cap stuff and your scouting stuff, but I am the coach of this team. And Paxson had a big problem with that because he didn't want his coach to have a sense that he had just as much authority or an ability to shut his front office out of their practices. Come on. Paxson is not great at having relationships with coaches. I think that's a very big reason, by and large, the biggest reason why they hired Fred Hoiberg in the first place. It wasn't because they had great faith in his ability to run a modern NBA pace and space offense, even though that was what they said. More so, it was Jerry Reinsdorf said it himself in that scathing letter explaining the firing of Tom Thibodeau 3 years ago. It's a breakdown of communication and trust. Fred Hoiberg is a yes man, a rollover, a pushover, a guy who will probably more likely have a quote-unquote positive relationship with the front office. So, I mean, come on, Jerry. Don't tell me that Paxson is just like so great at relating to his coaches and building strong relationships there. Right now, it seems like, yeah, you have a strong relationship with your head coach because he's milquetoast. He's a guy you brought in to be a yes man. He's a pushover. He's Ned Flanders Hoiberg. Cool. Your relationship with your previous two head coaches crashed and burned, and one of them literally culminated with physical altercation. Don't give me that crap, Jerry.
So finally, there's two other quotes I want to read, two from Jerry Reinsdorf. And I got to preface this with this because I know if you're a Cubs fan and a Bulls fan, you probably don't have a whole lot of love for Jerry Reinsdorf for the way he's managed that team. But if you're a White Sox fan, you have a little bit of sympathy just because the direction and the way that they've rerouted their system as far as the White Sox go, it's clear, transparent. They've got a guy in there that is a genius in Rick Hahn, and he's letting him take over that course. So I think people in that terms are happy with Jerry Reinsdorf and the way that the White Sox are rebuilding. But at the same time, if you look at the Bulls, it's not so much the case. So there's two other things just talking about the rebuild that he says. He says, I figure I have at the most 15 to 20 years left and I'd like to win again. I don't like being caught in the middle. I think the rebuild is going great. We don't want to be fooled by winning 6 games in a row, but we are seeing our young players step up. We're seeing Mirotić show what we thought we had in the first place. Chris Dunn is coming on. Bobby Portis is having a good year, and Zach LaVine hasn't even played yet. I think Gar and John have put together the core of something good. Now it remains to be seen if we can take the next two steps, mediocrity and being good without being stuck too long in mediocrity. So that's a little bit interesting to me too. So I think I appreciate him recognizing that the Bulls were stuck in the middle. He doesn't like being stuck in the middle. But at the same time, everybody in Chicago and everybody that has a pulse that follows the Bulls knows that. So I understand it from his point, and really we've talked about Jerry Reinsdorf as being more hands-off with the Bulls, and now Michael Reinsdorf sort of taking those reins. But ultimately, I think this high praise just because of the winning streak and all of a sudden these backings of the front office and some of these other things just because a winning streak has all of a sudden hit, and now this is like the perfect opportunity for them to get into the media and funnel some good Bulls news. I think it overshadows everything else that has been at fault for the last 4 or 5 years. And the way that the Bulls are handled. I'm okay with giving credit, but I'm also not going to over lavish or over applaud anybody for anything that's been done so far.
Let's be honest. This is more BS. Reinsdorf saying that Paxson is great at relating to his coaches is BS, and this is more BS saying that he's not happy and not satisfied with being a middle of the pack team. Reinsdorf was more than pleased for the discombobulated, poorly thrown together, and overpaid veteran-laden Bulls team last year to get in, sneak in with a tiebreaker to the eighth spot and have a couple of home playoff games against Boston in the first round. We sold some Dwayne Wade jerseys. Maybe we sold a few Rajon Rondo jerseys. We filled the UC. We led the league in attendance yet again. And, hey, we made a little bit of noise in the playoffs, kind of surprising people with two upset road wins to start our playoff season that was quite short after that, losing four straight. Reinsdorf was happy enough with that. Reinsdorf does not care about this Bulls team winning another championship. He could not care less. Anyone who believes that he truly cares, other than filling the seats and selling merch, you're fooling yourselves. Jerry Reinsdorf, I mean, it's kind of a morbid thing, but he said it himself. He's like, I don't know how many years I got left. In those remaining years, I guarantee you 110%, Reinsdorf would much rather see this White Sox rebuild that he is working on turn itself around quickly, way more so than the Bulls becoming relevant again before he dies. Morbid, apologies. Sorry, not sorry, though. That's the truth of the matter. Reinsdorf does not give two shits about whether or not this Bulls rebuild works itself into a competitor again before he dies. Couldn't care less.
I'll be honest. I'm on the board of I want to see the White Sox win a World Series. If I had to pick between the two, they come probably pretty damn close in terms of whether I'd like to see a World Series on the South side or a NBA championship on the West side. Being more realistic, I think the opportunity for the White Sox to win a championship is far greater right now in terms of the next 5-7 years than the Bulls, but it could change.
Yeah,
who knows?
And you know what? No judgment to people who share that opinion, but this is just the problem when you have one mogul, one very rich guy owning two franchises in the same city. He's split his focus. He's picked a favorite. And the lesser favorite suffers because of it. The Bulls have been mismanaged, and you know Jerry's just kind of been ignoring them for years now, and that's a problem. People in Chicago talk about how the McCaskies need to sell the Bears, but I'm sorry, unless Michael Reinsdorf shows us something in the next couple of years where he's seizing more control, wrestling more control away from Jerry, and making changes. The Reinsdorfs need to sell the Bulls just as much as the McCaskies need to sell the Bears for real change to happen.
Last hit here. Give me 30 seconds on this question. LaVar Ball wants to start a junior basketball association. So for high school graduates that are done and don't want to play college, to want to develop their game
Boo.
And get paid,
Boo.
What do you think about it?
Boo. Boo.
I knew you were going to say that.
Boo. Boo. No.
I had
don't
to bring
care.
It up.
Awful. Terrible. Also, that's a bunch of talk. There's no way LaVar Ball can actually maintain that kind of payout for all of those people.
You are a hater.
I mean, the Balls are making money, but they don't have that kind of money. Not yet, anyway. It's a giant.
Stay in your lane.
It's a giant, big-headed idea, and it's just another way to keep his name in the headlines. And I'm sorry for anyone who becomes an employee, a.k.a. player, in the Ball Family Basketball League. Give me a break. Barf. Barf.
You are a hater.
I'll say this. I think it's a very interesting idea. And I think if he surrounds himself with the right people, the right business people, also the right people that know how to build a league, but have been also around youth basketball and college basketball for a long time. I think if he puts himself around this, around smart people and people that can help grow this and build this, I think it's an interesting thing that's going to compete with not only the NCAA and the G League, but we'll see how it goes out. I think if everything turned out well, it could be a legitimate competitor and another legitimate option for high school players. But we'll see what happens with this. I know it's early preliminary talks of this league, but I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
That's my opinion. Barf. Go away, LeVar Ball, for the love of God.
Uh-oh, welcome to Big Baller Zone.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Follow all of our content over at LockedOnBulls.com. Well, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android. Anywhere you find podcasts, you'll be able to find us. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com. The Dash Radio app, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow all the Bulls news and stay up to date with us here. Make sure you're subscribing to the show, that you listen to us on Dash Radio, or follow us of all of our content at LockedOnBulls.com. Hopefully you enjoy the Cavaliers-Bulls game tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode to lead you into the holiday weekend. We're excited for it. It should be a great show. Hopefully you enjoy the game tonight. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night.